Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we're all in this dream together at a time of useful consciousness. That's the flight term for the moment we have between when oxygen cuts out and we're still awake, right? But it is Dark of the Moon, convening encore with Sean Patrick O'Donohue to further honor Pope Francis, that we may compost the nefarious into nutrient for the desirable good, and to convene in the Alam al-Mithral, the dream world. Again, it's Dark of the Moon with many, many planets, parts of ourselves, in Pisces, Ceres, Demeter, goddess of the Earth, right next to the Moon, right next to the North Node, right next to Venus and Saturn, conjoined at 27 Pisces, which is our profound invitation to be agents of invitation of the good into the world. So there are so many ways to participate in the fate of the world. Sean writes, "Thank you, Pope Francis, for your courage, your compassion, and your decency. Your devotion to the poor, to the earth, and to the mother were rare, beautiful, and profound. In a world that hangs in the balance, I mourn the loss of your moral weight on the global scale." So welcome, Sean Patrick.
Thank you. Grateful to be here with you.
Oh, that's great. Okay, I think we're sorting out my audio kerfuffles at my end. I can hear everybody. That's good. All right. So, you know, we did some honoring on our Monday trickster call, but I felt like there was more to do. But I do want to start off with that, which is it was Sunday Easter night, and I was doing many things on the computer, and I noticed that the Moon and Pluto were conjoined at 3 Aquarius, going, ooh, the image for 3 Aquarius is restoring a lost condition of spirituality to the world. And I noted when I noted it, which was 1:35 a.m. East Coast time, and that turns out to be exactly the time when Pope Francis has gone backstage at 7:35 a.m. on Easter Monday in Vatican City. So I was awake. I noted it. And tonight, or today, we read the world through his departure chart and many things. I love Bill McKibben saying, perhaps the world's greatest environmental champion is dead, and we honor those things. And in his death chart, the Moon-Pluto conjunction were exactly overhead on the midheaven, which is our antenna, what we're calibrated to send and receive into the world. So it was so perfect, you know, restoring a lost condition of spirituality to the world. And we go, ooh, ooh. So there's so many ways we want to go, Sean Patrick. I have a few things. Mosab Abu Toha said, in his final address yesterday, Pope Francis called for a ceasefire in Gaza. He said that what's happening in Palestine is cruelty. This is not a war. A real man of peace, he spoke when most leaders, quote unquote, kept silent or justified the atrocities and fueled the killing, when most presidents showed zero signs of humanity. Rest in peace, Pope Francis. And then there's many things we want to honor, the nefariousness of the world, Sean Patrick, you know, but also the power of the church as well. Quoting yeah. Reverend Benjamin Broadbent of the Community Church of Sebastopol, and I'm posting links to that great article. When a country or a political party seems to have gone too far down the road of cruelty and inhumanity, it really becomes the duty of religious people to voice the call of conscience. And it's a great article in the Press Democrat, all hail to local newspapers, what's driving local congregations to declare themselves sanctuaries for North Bay immigrants. 9 Sonoma County churches and 1 synagogue are declaring their congregations sanctuaries for immigrants following President Trump's vow to unleash the largest deportation, etc. So, yes. And then I have many quotes, and you do too. And we have Tim Walz in the wings that we can also play, you know, that it's sort of like Pope Francis hands the baton to Tim Walz. So we'll honor that. And then you also said that today is the anniversary of the Easter rising in Ireland. Do you want to guide us into that hum?
Absolutely. So on this day in 1916, a ragged band of poets and intellectuals and farmers and union leaders took over the General Post Office in Dublin, which was the center of the telegraph network for the British occupation of Ireland. And they declared a free Irish Republic in which men and women were equal and in which all people had the right to be part of the life of the land, and invoking that ancient Irish concept of saoirse, which is the freedom that comes from knowing our relationship with the land. And it was the first time a rebellion was suddenly felt and known across the world, because having seized the telegraph, they were able to send telegrams to New York and have the uprising reported more or less real time. And their vision was an amazing vision, which still has yet to be fulfilled, of a united Ireland whose resources were the common treasury of all people, and we all had freedom. And I think especially of James Connolly, one of the signatories of the proclamation, one of those executed a few weeks later at Kilmainham Jail, who said, "Our demands most moderate are, we only want the earth."
Oh, say that again. Our demands most moderate are, say again.
We only want the earth.
Ah, yes. Yeah, and you know, so many things I remember also about Pope Francis, the many things he did working with environmental filmmakers to project all the flora, fauna, fungi of the earth, you know, on this inside Vatican Square, and people that I still search for it on YouTube. It went on for hours, and people just spontaneously assembled in complete quiet with lit candles. Nobody told them to do that in reverence for the earth, and it was such a profound, authentic ritual, as though if beings were looking down from anywhere going, "Look, humans are doing good things." And I did find this wonderful projections of flora fauna on St. Peter's Basilica. Also, it was an ongoing project to remember our kinship and you know, Francis's kindness to animals and concern for the earth, and the Laudato Si, am I saying that right? His book, his encyclical, which is, you know, be praised. So that deep dedication. Right. And so here we are. And the sun in Taurus right now, again, incarnational sensuality, you know, connected to all of these Pisces planets, right? The Alama Mithral. So the portals are open between the backstage imagined of desirable, of all that's ever been good about humans cooperating with nature, eager to be invited in at this crisis time. And the sun quintiles little asteroid Pallas Athena, whose image is a white dove descends bearing a message of peace. And we go, right. It is one of the better Christian, you know, rituals. I'm fond of Pentecost. I know it's 40 days after Easter. But it's when the Holy Ghost descends as a fiery dove on the head of each apostle and grants them the capacity to speak and understand all language. And it's like, that's a good idea. And as we often do, Sean Patrick O'Donohue, we do an upgrade to speak and understand all language, not just humans, right? Not just human, all language.
Right.
We're all in this. Yeah.
Yeah, which interestingly is an upgrade that Francis was very much a part of. And it's a funny thing, you know, being an anarchist pagan, seeing the praises of a pope. But as long as institutions like churches exist, it's best to have wise and compassionate people involved and helping to steer them. And I think about... with Francis, it was so beautiful that both his theology and his practice reflected things so different than any pope in modern memory. So, and we think about on a practical level, his adhering to the vows of voluntary poverty. He died with $100 to his name. He often went out wandering in plain clothes. He loved to go visit prisons and hospitals and to wash people's feet. And every night at 7 p.m., he would make a phone call to the one Catholic parish in Gaza to speak with a priest and hear the suffering he was witnessing and offer his solidarity. And so living in that way, well, at the same time, I think that the big shifts he brought in theology are very underrecognized. And so we can think about Laudato Si. He makes a very simple statement that it's not enough to think of different species as potential resources to be exploited while overlooking the fact that they have value in themselves. And that recognition of the value in all of life, not just human life, is something deeply radical in the official church. I mean, certainly the desert church of the first century and the Irish church and all the other syncretic churches around the world have had that recognition. But for someone sitting in the Vatican to recognize that was profound. And it was not, to me, separate from the really remarkable rewriting he did of cosmology, where he said that Mary was the co-creatrix of the world. And he said that when the church loses its Marian element, it loses its heart and its humility. And he also, interestingly, elevated Mary Magdalene in the eyes of the church to be the 13th apostle. And while I think that an elevation to recognize her fullness beyond that would have been even better, that is a significant recognition, especially when we think about what happens in all the fairy tales when the 13th one, who is a wise woman, is cast out and is not invited to the supper. And here he was in his subtle but profound way, inviting her to the supper and allowing what had been disrupted to begin to be transformed. And no, he didn't finish that transformation. And certainly there were many things that I wish he could have done that he didn't do. But what he did do was profound beyond even the recognition of his admirers, I believe.
And what you say, yes, we are kinned, we are kinned. It is quirky for an anarchist animist to praise the Pope. I am with you, my brother. Going, yes, and again, transcending our to cross all borders, teammates, and even the pagans and the church. Marie Laveau, a great mentor, an ally, great voodoo queen of New Orleans. So she was in good shape with the cathedral and the bishop of the cathedral in New Orleans, because using her genius, she used the herbs to heal the great typhoid and cholera outbreaks. And so Marie Laveau was invited into the cathedral in New Orleans to do her snake dance, to bring voodoo was welcomed in the Catholic Church there. And we go, yes, it's very kind of Mary Magdalene-ish, right? And it's like, and then, to look for allies and goodness in all of us who may want to, in a customized way, we cannot live through the dead, but we can dedicate to inviting the best in them to live through us. Yeah, in his last day of life, Francis was in the prisons washing feet, right? It's such a strong contrast, right, to the cruel dementor, regime that is inflicting so much that we'll get to just to compost it into nutrient and to invite in what we need at this time. So yeah, and when you say he walked among the people wearing ordinary clothes, and like Harun al-Rashid in the Arabian Nights, who would, don, and just walk through the people to feel kin and to gather, like, oh, and to expand his compassion, to listen deeply to conversations and go, oh, to be a wise agent. And so I think I'll just bring in, we'll bring in Tim Walz right now, his short thing, and we go, yes, a lineage, Pope Francis to Tim Walz. So here's Tim Walz being quite woofy. Here we go.
Now, in this land of the free and home of the brave, we have university students being swept up, shoved into unmarked vans, and fathers being tossed into Salvadorian gulags without a hint of due process. So I want to be real clear about this. If you say you love freedom, but you don't believe freedom is for everybody, then the thing you love isn't freedom, it's privilege.
Yay, let that resound. And let us all remember the sacred arc of etymology. The word privilege comes from privé legé, which means private law. So, like, there you have it. There you have it. And then just to weave and go, oh yes, that's such a great Tim Walz thing. And you can hear how it resonates. People go, yes, right. And Francis saying, as long as the problems of the poor are not radically resolved by rejecting the absolute autonomy of markets and financial speculation, and by attacking the structural causes of inequality, no solution will be found for the world's problems, or for that matter, to any problems. And we go, yeah. And I was remembering, he was Pope for 12 years, one complete Jupiter cycle. So I had told the Monday Trickster team and yourself, so 12 years ago I went to CPAC, right, one of the lowest realms of hell, the Conservative Political Action Committee, because I'll go anywhere. And Francis had just been smoked into that, and there was somebody. It was a table of power-possessing beings, sort of. And I was ignored, just, creative-looking woman, never mind. And so they were speaking frankly. And there was a man, I'll tell you how I've reimagined it, but there was a man from, I'm thinking, El Salvador, but he said, we have the new pope in our pocket, I'm pretty sure. But they didn't. And I said to you backstage just now in a phone call, it's like, in my mind's eye, I'm remembering that guy as looking just like Bukele. It might have been Bukele. I don't know. I mean, it makes sense that 12 years ago he'd be planning his nefariousness. It might be just the mind's eye, filling in the tarot card. But you'd also said that Bukele is Palestinian.
He is. His grandfather was from Bethlehem. And so, the ironies of which we see so often of people a few generations into a diaspora forget the suffering they come from. And it's also so striking hearing that they thought they had the Pope in their pocket, because I think about how they actually made the same mistake with Oscar Romero. They thought that because he was a very mild-mannered, scholarly man who didn't like to deal with the outside world, that he would be a sleepy caretaker of El Salvador's church, and that the Salvadoran government would be able to count on his silence. But then when he began to see the suffering of the church and the suffering of the people, he underwent a great conversion and transformation, and of course ultimately was killed by that government in collaboration with our own, and was elevated by Pope Francis to sainthood and made the patron saint of the persecuted.
Wow. Such a powerful redress, because as we spoke before, Pope John Paul and my former sister-in-law, now an ancestor, alas, hello, Janie Barnes, did a PBS documentary on Pope John Paul, previous by two. And it was a really, I wouldn't have watched it unless my sister-in-law had made it, but it was really profound because she did, as all good storytellers do within us all, teased one story into all the stories. But she made the point that for Pope John Paul, growing up under Nazism and then oppressive communism, he could not meet Oscar Romero. He could not understand that liberation theology was a different good thing. He just saw it as communism. And when Romero visited Pope John Paul, he was sent away, right? I think he was sent away.
Yeah.
And went back and was assassinated while doing Mass, is that right?
While saying Mass, yes. I believe it was while blessing the host. And his final sermon had been the day before. His final homily was delivered on the radio the day before, where he spoke directly to the police and the military. And he told them, when you hear the voice that orders you to kill, hear instead the voice that says, thou shalt not kill. I beg you, I beseech you, I order you, halt the repression.
So we're honoring all goodness and all who dedicated their lives and who gave their lives, you know, again, you know, come on in across all borders, you know, and what another thing that Francis said, and you can find really some great things. The promise was that when the glass was full, it would overflow benefiting the poor. But what happens instead is that when the glass is full, it magically gets bigger and nothing ever comes out for the poor. We call it, that's great. A rare being as we've honored him through the years, you know, with all of our disclaimers, you know, but going a pagan pope. And I love in his chart, you know, so he was born December 17th, 1936 at 9 a.m. in Buenos Aires, Sagittarius, incarnational agent of Jupiter, the power of research and blessing. And so we go, well, where's Jupiter? It's like, oh, it's right next to the sun when you're born, Pope Francis, but it's in a different sign. It's at 3 Capricorn, one of my favorite degrees, a party of campers packing their canoe at twilight, the ability to navigate dark water. And it's right next to Ceres Demeter, goddess of the earth. And part of what Jupiter in Capricorn says, you know, in his chart and humming in all of us, says, I will study anything and everything as long as it's useful. I will study anything and everything as long as we put it into practice. We go, that's right. So he was born with the moon and Venus in Aquarius, and he dies with the moon in Aquarius, conjoined Pluto. Huge transformation, you know, pouring into all of us. So, again, much honor. And, you know, his death chart, again, with Pluto and the moon overhead, restoring a lost condition of spirituality to the world. And we are in this, so in his death chart, in all of our charts, in the field in play, the sun in Taurus squares 90-degree angle to Mars in Leo on one side, and squares Pluto on the other. It's called a fixed T-square. And out there, many astrologers are going, oh, and we go, yes, that would be the description, but the instruction, right? Because this is participatory. Everything is participatory. Going, if we know this, what do? It's to have Mars in Leo, to make visible the whole realm of theater and ritual, create ritual or live melodrama, take your pick, right? And that's, right now is a time, you know, that really requires feeling that we all have a mission. Pluto is an intelligence humming within us all and within the world, restoring a lost condition of spirituality to the world. So Mars squares the sun in Taurus. Sun in Taurus's image is widow weeping at an open grave, you know, returning to the earth, what is of the earth. So it's all creativity and theater for the earth, not celebrity hoo-ha, you know. And then the sun squares Pluto, again, death, rebirth, dynamic, that out of this cauldron really does want to come a culture of reverent ingenuity, humans humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius, all the things we talk about for decades. But here it is. It's like, really got to do it. I love AOC saying, well, what if it's all supposed to die, you know, and then something is reborn out of that. But we go, yes, that's one of many good stories, but there's so much cruelty that we do want to put on our work table. The wife of Kilmar Abrego Garcia has had to move to a safe house after the Department of Homeland Security posted her street address online. It's like, dementors, right? There's all of that. And then looking at the kind of Pope Francis, whatever found a home in him, you know, there's these other beautiful things. The families of El Paso shooting victims at the shooter's sentencing to 27 life sentences asked to be able to hug him in order to be able to forgive him. You know, and the woman who stood up said, I know that's probably not allowed, but the judge said, would it feel good to you to be able to hug the killer who killed your brother and then another who killed your husband and, you know, in order to forgive them? And she said it would. And then he said, go ahead. So they hugged the killer. And again, mercy is contagious. Another woman said, yes, my beloved husband also was killed by this man. And I too want to hug him in order to give forgiveness. And we go, well, okay. I love always redefining forgive as to mean to give energy for change, right? May we be full of that. You know, and then there's so much churlishness in the world that we will address, you know, after our break and before, you know, Peter Thiel and psilocybin and RFK and horribleness and registries and so on, to put on the table the horrific, and then to have that hone, you know, our hunger and our affinity to invite in what will address this. I like Governor Pritzker, you know, saying Illinois is defunding all of its investments in El Salvador. Good point. That's right. And then we'll get to Bukele pulling us a weird thing on Trump. It's hard to know, but he goes, actually, I'm negotiating with the Venezuelan government to turn over the 238, most of whom are completely innocent people, just, you know, swept up, to return them to Venezuela in a prisoner exchange for right-wing political prisoners in Venezuela. It's like, oh, it goes on. But before we get to our splendid break music, again, ghost dance, you know, to call in, you know, we're calling in the Easter sunrise or the Easter rising in Ireland. And I like also, you know, Paul Revere's ride where the word Minutemen, and we have Minutewomen, of course, which is people who could show up in a minute. And they met to conspire in a positive way at the Green Dragon Tavern. And I go, oh, that's great. We're all... Let's all meet now in the Green Dragon Tavern, right, in the traveling now, where everything good and powerful and positive that has ever composted tyranny is available, right? So does that amuse you to convene in the Green Dragon Tavern?
It does, and it brought me so much joy to see the Old North Church on the anniversary,
yes,
of Paul Revere's ride, hanging its own banner of warning that tyranny is again at the door.
Yes, one if by land and two if by sea. Yeah, and Heather Cox Richardson, may she be praised, right? She gave her talk there. All this is available online. And she's a very dedicated person. She said to give a speech like that, you know, she said, I really worked and honed and dedicated. I think what we're feeling to admire in others is the quality of dedication. You know, Robert Bly often talked about the Minnesota poet Mary Dell LeSueur and saying all the young women used to gather around her just to feel etched, you know, in their own art against the power of this older woman's dedication. And so for everybody, you know, wherever you see in animals, plants, animals, humans, you know, like, there's something admirable, you know, to feel ourselves etched, to feel ourselves matched for this time. So we're gonna have Robbie Robertson sing the Ghost Dance, and I think that's the portals are open. The portals are open. Believe nothing, entertain possibilities, that the portals are open. So when Robbie sings, you know, "We Shall Live Again," let's see it. So here's Robbie Robertson, Ghost Dance.
You don't stand a chance against my prayers. You don't stand a chance against my love. They outlawed the ghost dance. They outlawed the ghost dance. We shall live again. We shall live again. We shall live again. Crazy Horse was a mystic. He knew the secret of the trance. And Sitting Bull, the great apostle of the ghost dance. Come on, Comanche. Come on, Blackfoot. Come on, Shoshone. Come on, Cheyenne.
That's Robbie Robertson, All Praise Be Upon Him, and Ancestor Now singing Ghost Dance, We Shall Live Again. And it resonates also to last week, hosting Dune Lankert on the eve of the Good Friday anniversary of the Exxon Valdez. And, you know, these holy days and dark days, right, in Alaska, Good Friday, you know, is the day when the huge earthquake happened and also when the Exxon Valdez happened. His ally, my spirit brother David Grimes, said, who was there, they were both there, that, you know, that night, everyone, all the scientists and rescue workers and everything, he said, they all had the same dream, which was all the souls of the animals rising up through Heart Island. It's an island shaped like a heart. And he said, and their message was love. It's like, oh my God. And then just to draw upon them, you know, it was David Grimes and Dune Lankert and many people came alive at that moment. And when they got settlement for Exxon Valdez money, they were like, well, what, you know, on to the good, what can we do? We will secure and save the Copper River Delta from logging. We will put this money to good use. And it reminds me of Life is Beautiful, a movie that I quite love about the power of storytelling to transform even in the concentration camp. And when the protagonist is counting on a man who has implied he could help him and his son to escape, and it becomes clear that the man has no power to do that, who's been fooling the protagonist, and the protagonist does not waste one moment in, like, you know, in futility or anger. He's like, on to the next thing. Oh, here's a live mic. Let me speak words of love to my wife. And I think that's just to distill and bring into all of us. It's like, you know, on to the next thing. Where's the next opportunity? This is a horrible thing. What can we do? What can we ladle out to help? I love Sarah McBride, quoting her father, saying if everyone has just a little bit of courage, then no one has to be a hero. We go, that's good too. So shall we go on to nefariousness and then invite in what can compost it to? Yes, the nefariousness of so many things, the registry of autistic people, the access to everyone's health things, you know, whatever. I know you have a lot that hums around this issue. Whatever you would like to say or guide us in this matter, Sean Patrick O'Donohue.
Absolutely. And I want to mostly keep in the sidelines the things that RFK has been ignorantly and hatefully saying about us, and bring forward some of the truth of, well, why is this culture so interested in pushing us to the side and controlling us? And I think about, so allegedly the reason why all of us autistic people are going to be registered and have our medical records combed over is to figure out why we exist, and to figure out why we exist so that future generations of us won't exist, which to me is a denigration not only of our own lives, but those of our descendants whose existence is trying to be prevented, and our ancestors, both those ancestors who suffered persecution under different labels, and in the very distant past, those ancestors who were the ones who the community understood with their fractally branching brains could perceive the patterns others couldn't perceive, and could listen more deeply and more consistently to the language that the rest of the world was speaking. And I think about another wonderful voice who's joined the ancestors, Steve Silberman, who wrote, "Whatever autism is, it is not a unique product of modern civilization. It is a strange gift from our deep past, passed through millions of years of evolution." And here we are squandering and trying to destroy that gift, except in the handful of places where we can profit from it. I mean, Microsoft and Google will create the special wings for autistic people to work more comfortably in, so that autistic minds can be mined for creativity. But for those of us who read the patterns instead in the clouds or in the water or in history, that's a little bit more dangerous to the project of civilization. And they try to break it all down into these categories of functioning, to which the question has to be asked, well, what's the function of a human being? If the function of a human being is the production of wealth, then yes, many of us are ill-suited to that particular role. But the function of a human being is the perception and celebration and creation of beauty, then we have a unique role to play in that, which of course brings us full circle to the radical insight of Francis, being that all of life has a role to play. All of life is unique, and that we need to stop reducing things to objects and measuring those objects by their economic value.
Yes, I remember that. You know, when we first were connected by your very first book, and I think it's in your opening pages where you so eloquently liberate our thinking about autism, and it's like, ah, that's great. That's great, going all the way back to that, you know, what does this want to be? And as you quote Saint Pope Francis, nothing in this world is indifferent. I go, right. And everything to be honored. And then, you know, I do honor Heather Cox Richardson, you know, her historian, you know, but completely pulled out of academia history into pertinence, right? She says, you know, Trump is particularly incoherent, like he's always been, but she goes, no, he can't hold a thought. It's more. So who's in charge? he's non-compos mentis, right? And so she goes, well, there's three factions, and they're kind of at war with each other. And that's why the I Ching had said so long ago when I asked them in 2016, what do you have to say, I Ching, about this? And it said, it's when you put five venomous creatures in a jar until one of them kills and eats the others. And it's like, well, have at it, you know. But she goes, you know, the first faction is Project 25, which is Christian nationalists. These are the ones getting rid of diversity and the word gender, right? And the thing, and see what Heather brings up, and you, in accord with Heather, the registry, which should give all of us chills, right? And she says, you know, to have all of our health records, you know, autistic people, but really everybody, you know, is the Christian nationalist can look and go, oh, look, this person's pretty old, you know, and their healthcare is kind of expensive, and let's just write them off. It's akin to, you know, the financial murder that's going on, that's called that, of, you know, getting into the IRS and declaring immigrants who have paid taxes, declaring them dead, right? Which means you can't have a bank account, you can't do anything, you can't, you know, it's just a nightmare. It's like the churlishness, you know, is, you know, just anyway, just, like in DC's Union Station, a really magnificent train station, they've removed all the benches because homeless people might sit on them. It's like, oh, just, you know, small and large horribleness. But anyway, she says, Project 25, they're very up for getting rid of equality, absolutely getting rid of equality, you know, and she goes into detail, like, you know, and then she goes, well, that's Project One. They want to get rid of equality and get rid of democracy, as, you know, never mind that, overturn democracy, get rid of equality. She said the second faction is the Broligarchs. They too want to get rid of all regulations, right? All Saturn regulations. Get rid of the government. Get rid of the government. And that's, we'll take, I'll toss it back to you, just go boo, and that's Peter Thiel, get rid of democracy, yes, as an impediment, right? And you'd said, right, just, we need all of us to do this too. Peter Thiel is doing what with psilocybin?
Yes, well, there are several important things to know here about him and about that whole crew. And I think, but I want to go very first way back to Tim Walz and to privilege and to your wonderful etymology of private law. And yeah, while they proclaim themselves to be libertarian, their idea of liberty is private law. They actually want to create private city-states that are governed by corporations. And so, Gil Duran of the has done some wonderful reporting on this and the very frightening movement that Peter Thiel and Elon Musk and J.D. Vance and all of them are part of. But and of course Peter Thiel and Sam Altman and Elon Musk are all white men from apartheid South Africa, from very pro-apartheid families. And so there's that aspect as well. And so that becomes important background when we look at the fact that Peter Thiel has actually become one of the major investors in both medical psilocybin and in the creation of psilocybin retreat centers. And then
the last thing you said, in psilocybin research and psilocybin what?
Retreat centers.
Oh, okay.
So resorts, spa,
right,
spiritual health spas. And so one of the things that has become clear to me is, okay, well, how does this align with the rest of the agenda? Well, the idea is if you can control set and setting, you can shape the outcome of the experience. And so while I do hold out some hope that the anarchic nature of the molecules themselves and the beings that create them will hold some surprises for Peter Thiel and his ilk, their desire to control set and setting is very, very disturbing. And it's one of the things I'll be speaking about at Maine Fungi Fest at the end of May.
Ah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, Maine Fungi Fest, excellent, right? The gathering of those aligned with the fungal realm. We want all of this. Much goodness is going on. We want to do keep this in mind. So that's very sneaky of Peter Thiel and the psilocybin retreat centers, right? You can see it already. You know, it's part of the dynamic of once, you know, psychedelics became a business, right? You're losing some of the sacramental kind of qualities, and it's getting, you know, and it turns into therapy, which is, you know, okay, are people working on their trauma? But let's come back to what's available to us now, right? It's like what I love about the sacraments, both micro and full, you know, of LSD and psilocybe mushrooms, is they do open the portals, and there's a lot of humming here, open the portals, you know, to the intelligence, powerful intelligences of nature, you know, in which we get to go, come on in. As cultures, you know, as all humans before us have done, you know, like with the cave paintings, the paintings were not art, they were portals through which to have commerce to and fro. New Orleans keeps that going. Haiti keeps that going, you know, in its powerful art. And for all of us, too, you know, it's a time of we're just throwing out stuff. Pluto says throw out stuff, old shoes that aren't you anymore, clear out closets, reset the altars. It's like I'm moving everything around, going, the computer died, I'm still on a headset here, but it might be coming in. So, but that means moving this around and moving the art around. And where do you want to go? Albert Hoffman, great portrait I have of him, you know, moving everything around. So, yeah, there's that. And then inviting in. But Heather says, you know, okay, so that's the second team, the Peter Thiel, get rid of democracy as an impediment, yeah, and take over psilocybe retreat centers, not unakin to RFKs, like, let's have health farms where we mandatorily send people. I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound good, you know, so they can have clean living and no phones, and it's like, oh, that could go wrong. That's just, you know, well, mandatory really right away. It's like, so there's all kinds of farms, you know, and then psilocybe retreat centers. It's ripe for co-opting, you know. A lot of the therapy groups that I know that use psychedelics, you know, have gone way suburban and wealthy and white, you know, and talking to people way back, you know, at the beginning of this disjuncture, you know, some was like, you know, don't trust gurus, trust plants. The plants know what they're doing. Apparently they just want to, you know, work with wealthy, affluent white people now. And it's like, okay, you know, what the hell? We invite that. But but it's dodgy. It's all the more important that all of us, teammate, we put some vetting standards on the table. You know, and Pluto says throw everything into the cauldron, you know, and have your vetting standards. You know, for me, everything, all spiritual teachings, all groups, all whatever the thing, throw it into the cauldron and go, you know, is it equal? Is it equal men and women? Is it equal humans and the rest of our species? You know, also, is trickster welcome? Can the truth be said without cringing? Yes. Okay, then ladle it out, and if not, then throw it back in. You know, so for everybody really to make one's own customized vetting standards in micro personal life as well, because everything's in shambles. But I love Terry Pratchett using shambles, the word, we, you know, it means sort of chaos, whatever. But he said to address shambles, make a shamble. A shamble is a magical tool that you make by just whatever's at hand, lint in your pocket, a pencil, a coin, or whatever, and you put it together, and it's a shambles that restores order to the world. Anyway, I find that super charming. So everybody, just what's in your pocket? You know, what's in your pocket? What's in front of you? Just arrange those things, and part of the material, incarnationally actual world and the whole realm of atmosphere, and for all of us to be atmosphere artists, to create the atmosphere conducive to the good, is when we move stuff around, it changes, you know, that's visible stuff, right? But it changes the atmosphere. It's like, oh, that feels better. oh, that feels, you know, and all cultures, again, before our own, you know, imprisoned mind thing, you know, really understood this, you know, that you could, that places, it's like, no, this isn't quite the right spot. No, no, oh, this is, oh, this, yeah, this is good, this is good. Or talking to everything, I mean, full-on animism is necessary. Where do you want to go, little book? Do you want me to leave you on a street corner or give it away or keep it? You know, it just, again, I think talking to everybody. But the third faction that Heather says is, so first is the Project 2025 team, like they're doing it. Project 2 is, or faction 2 is Peter Thiel, get rid of democracy as an impediment and, you know, take over psilocybin and everything. Number 3, she says, is the rendition team run by Stephen Miller. It's like these people look like the cartoon demons that they are, and he's like, get rid of at least the immigrants for starters, you know. Let, you know, and this requires a strong, stable state. Well, this is where Project faction number 3 is a little bit at war with faction number 2 and number 1, which is like, no, no state. And Stephen Miller's like, no, we must have a state in order to suppress people and get rid of at least all immigrants for starters. And then Heather reminds us that it was King George III was denying due process. And that's when Thomas Paine came up with the law is the king. The law is the king, you know, again, not privilege, but the law is the king. Yes. And then she got on to RFK Jr., the database, and the government keeping a database and lists of meta. So our own deep magic, like what do you feel to call in? What do you feel to call in from anywhere, from your own ancestral reach? I mean, the Easter uprising, the goodness of Pope Francis, the wisdom of wolves. I don't know. You know, what should we call into this party here?
Well, I've been, as my own body has been in the process of remaking after surgery, just as everybody's body is constantly being remade. I've been reflecting a lot on something the wonderful Irish mystic John Moriarty spoke about, where he talked about sitting in a living room in Connemara and holding the bone of a dolphin in his hands and feeling its grace. Mm. And he reflected that a dolphin was once upon a time a land animal, and that land animal went to the sea and said, shape me to suit you. And he said, our problem is that instead we say to the earth, we will shape you to suit us. And so the wonderful opportunity we have in our own being constantly remade, whether in moments of being psychedelically opened to re-imprinting, or simply having the re-imprinting experience of walking on the earth every day, if we can shift our prayer and shift our intention to shape me to suit you, how much more beautifully things will flow.
Yeah, and the dolphin was a land animal. Again, we can see this if we pay attention, and attention to our animal king, as the movie Flo does so well. But when I had the splendid wolf dog, Moondog, and when he was quite young, we went to the beach, and we're walking along the beach, and he got so excited by something in the water. He was like, oh, ooh, ooh, but excited, delighted. I'm like, what? He could hear something, right? And then the dolphins. Then I could see the dolphins, and he was so enthused. It was like, oh, long separated kin. We can feel it again. You know, may we all feel our kinship across water and earth. You know, and invite in the qualities that we admire. I love Terence McKenna saying, you know, when life began to emerge from the sea onto land, and it felt the heavy pull of gravity, and was like, oh, can we do this? And he said, Terence said, life always responds, you betcha. So we want to, you know, in our elixir, right? We get to put some of, you know, Terence McKenna, You Betcha, you know, life force there. Dolphin, land animal, you know, again, the wolves, models of leadership. We're called upon really to define everything. And let me toss it to you. I think there's a huge opportunity to welcome in the liberating power of betrayal. You know, on social media, people are often like, oh, they voted for Trump and this is what they get. No. Venus, Saturn, be more like Pope Francis. Invite in the good, going, yes, here's a unifying story. Everyone's been betrayed in this country. Everyone, right? And so it's opportune for everyone with whom the craft of storytelling, you know, either beginning or advanced, you know, is something to be dedicated to, going, come this way. You know, and to define everything, and that's a great way of spiraling out of conflict when people go, rah, 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 and I go, well, what's your definition of wise leadership? I like the wolf model myself, which is the wolf leader is the one that engages the playful ingenuity of the pack, and it's the calmest wolf. So I go, oh, that would be good. That would be really good. But we have, I want to give you just the last minute for anything that you want to do. Sean Patrick O'Donohue, inviting in, blessing, whatever you feel to do.
Well, that's wonderful about looking at betrayal in that way. And interestingly, synchronistically, a few weeks ago, I was listening to a talk by the late Maladoma Somei about the gift of betrayal. And he says that betrayal is something that somebody who is lacking in blessing does because they see that you are carrying blessing and they feel they are in poverty of blessing and they don't know how else to relate to it other than through that betrayal. And so it's their hunger for blessing that's leading it. And that that hit me deeply. And I think about that in terms of our relation to the earth, that in some ways, through our forgetting, we have betrayed the earth. But that betrayal is that we are in a state of lacking blessing. And so we turn hungrily toward the place of infinite blessing. But she's ready to welcome us back. And I can't resist commenting that your dog's experience, your wolf dog's experience, is actually contained in the Irish language. Because the word for wolf is Machtir, which is son of the land. But one of the names of the porpoise is Machuara, son of the sea. And so in looking back to be transformed, we can ask, who will we be the children of when we remember who we are?
Okay. That's wonderful. Thanks always, Sean Patrick O'Donohue. Thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey, Visionary Activist Show. You can find on Patreon for backstage notes, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you all so much. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Kirsten. Woof, 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 woof.